Welcome to a fantastic episode of the Pluralcast. Today's delightful guest is Kate Gregory, who has a brand new course available on Pluralsight On Demand that talks all about extending Visual Studio. And she helps us in this discussion that we have here on the podcast understand what the capabilities and the possibilities are. And they are plenty. There's an amazing amount of customization that I can do now with Visual Studio. I've been hearing a lot about this, but it was really great to hear from Kate some very real-world ways that I can go about starting to take advantage of this customization. So cool conversation. And one of the things that I try and do is keep you sort of aware of some of the goings-on around here at Pluralcast headquarters, and that would be my house. Because I do work out of my house. Well, I was away for 2 weeks in a row training this summer, and while I was gone, my dear wife and kids moved my office. And not only did they move my office, but they painted the room where my office now is. I've got really grown-up things in here now, like shelves that don't consist of plywood and egg crates. So I'm feeling really pretty high class in my new office here, which is where I'm sitting talking to you. And I'm trying really hard to not turn it into the manhole cave that my previous office was. And if you're a reader of the blog, then I'm sure you've seen some information about that. Okay, let's get on to our discussion with Kate. And, you know, I had to start just by simply asking her, why in the world somebody would want to go through all the trouble of customizing Visual Studio in the first place? It seems like this would be a pretty big deal.
Well, the number one reason is because your benefit will be more than the effort. And luckily, that's not a really high bar, because some of these efforts are measured in minutes. A handful of them are probably measured in seconds. Some of the things you can do to make Visual Studio work better for you will save you the amount of time it took to do it the first time you use it, and from then on, you'll be in gravy land.
When you say that, what comes to my mind is, if I am an old school person who maybe back in the day, maybe in college or something, I was using VI or Vi or Emacs or something like that, and then maybe I could program in some macros. Is that what you're talking about when you talk about extensibility in Visual Studio?
Well, there are macros. You know, one of those dawn of time techniques. It hasn't gone away. But there are a whole pile of other ways of extending it. And the fun thing with 2010 is the discoverability of extensions by other people. So, for example, you can go and get a free extension. It'll take you about a minute to find it and install it. And then you'll pick up some capability in the editor that you miss from elsewhere. So I like using one that highlights the current line, because especially when you have a lot of screens, giant screens, Also, my eyes are not 20 years old anymore. That little blinky cursor can be a little hard to spot, and it just draws the whole current line on a gray background. And, you know, it's an almost trivial change, but it really boosts your productivity if you're not moving the cursor keys around just to try to figure out where you are in the file, which I might have been known to do.
Okay, so you're talking about, in this case at least, you've gone out and installed some extension, and it just makes a very minor change to Visual Studio. You know, in my mind, when you say extension, I'm think about some very large utility that I've stuffed inside the Visual Studio shell.
Right. I mean, there's that whole spectrum. So you've got everything from highlighting the current line, or another guy I like is Triple Click. He just does the same thing as Triple Click in Word. He selects the whole line, all the way up to a tool like ReSharper or CodeRush, which is majorly changing the way the product looks and feels, or carrying on up to, I think I'll invent my own programming language and put it into Visual Studio so that when you press F5, you're running and debugging applications in your own new programming language. So whole range.
Yeah, sounds like it. So talk to me about what the simplest thing I might possibly do is. You know, I know that we've already brought up macros. A lot of people don't even realize macros are still there. So how would I use those, for example?
Macros were, you know, the caveman type extensibility for everything. And in their simplest form, you sort of push record, and then you interact with the product, and then you push stop, and then you can play back that series of keystrokes. So if you would like to type some text into the top of a file, you can record yourself typing that text, and then make that a macro and play it whenever you want to type that text in. You know, that boilerplate stuff about who wrote this file. I don't do that anymore because I let Team Foundation Services take care of that for me, but some people still do that. There's macros that are built in that you can just use. They turn line numbers on and off, or those kinds of really simple changes that you would do with the menus. So macros are about, they don't really add a capability to the product. They make it quicker for you to get to a particular capability that the product already had.
I'm thinking in my mind, I have a macro that I published up on Elegant Code recently, and I use it every day. And you know how some developers like to see that boxcar casing on their method names when they're doing unit testing?
Yes.
Yeah, it'll grab a line and simply do boxcar casing on the method name in that line. So something like that was pretty easy to write in macro. It wasn't that hard.
The very first macro I ever wrote, I wrote it in C++ because there used to be this capability to write your macros in C++ as well as scripting languages. And I wrote it so that in a C++ context, you know how in VB, if you implement an interface and you press enter, it splats in all the function stubs for you. And C# will do that on a right click. And I wanted C++ to be able to do that. So I wrote a macro that actually looked back in the line to see who you inherited from and then went and interrogated that class. It wasn't exactly reflection because it was C++, but reflection in spirit. And then put all the method signatures in your file for you.
Ah, that's pretty heavy duty.
You can go a whole spectrum again. You can go from really simple things that would be just one menu command, but you feel like making it more discoverable to yourself because you don't want to wait while a dialogue comes up, right up to you have the full object model of Visual Studio available to you, so you can interact with all the open documents, with the open project, with the open solutions, and so on.
Now, you mentioned something a moment ago. You said scripting languages when you were talking about macros. My understanding is that the macro scripting language is VB script, period, end of story. Do I have that wrong?
It's basically VB script. It's apparently it's something slightly other than VB script, but if you think of it as VB script, you'll be okay. But you've got all of .NET there, right, which is kind of weird. So, you know, you say system.daytime.now in the middle of it.
Well, I don't know why we're talking. I guess it's my fault. I don't know why we're talking about macros so much when there's so much more coolness in Visual Studio 2010. We should probably get off of that whole macro thing. So what's the next level of customization up I might look at?
Well, writing your own templates, that's another one that pays you back really the time that it takes to do it. You know, you've got some starting point type project, and you can create a project template or an item template, and there's capability built right in that you just file export as template and it makes the template for you. And then when you go to the file new project, the new type that you just made is there and you can make one of those. And the example I give in the course, just to be really simple, is take a WPF app and do some theming, you know, set your background, set your default look and feel for the whole app, and then save that as a project template and then use that as your starting point rather than the bare naked starting point.
Well, you just mentioned the course, and it turns out you just finished putting together an online course for Pluralsight. It's a Pluralsight course on all of this stuff that we're talking about here today, right?
That's right. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. We went from macros, and now we maybe have a couple of templates. I like item templates, by the way, particularly there for a long time in Visual Studio 2008. Anytime I created a unit test using Visual Studio, it put all this cruft in there. And so it was not a big deal using file save as template, or I believe it was export as template, to create a little item template, right?
That's right. And then that boilerplate scrudge that you need all the time is just there for you.
Okay. So that stuff we've seen in 2008. What's new in 2010?
Oh, the editor is entirely a new game because they completely rewrote the editor in managed code in WPF. And because it's WPF, we've got transparency and gradients and all kinds of cool stuff with the way that things are drawn, and even snazzier fonting availability. So, you know, you've got syntax coloring, but you can write an extension. It's already been done, so you could just go get it. That puts all your comments in italics instead of in a Roman font, that kind of thing, because you've got incredible editor capabilities, and everything you can think of is an extension point inside the editor.
The fact that the Visual Studio Editor is WPF means more than that I can zoom in and out, because I thought that's pretty much the big bang for the buck. There's more than that?
The zooming in and out is neat, but you know, you have You have better highlighting. Like, when I present, I do what a lot of us call the yellow highlight thing, which is I go into my fonts and colors and I change the way that the current line is highlighted. So at least for 2008 and before, I would change it from white on blue, which is pretty much unreadable on a big presentation screen, to black on yellow. Way more readable and looks like you're highlighting it. I don't need to do that in 2010 because the highlight is a little bit more sophisticated and it projects better. But you still have that same capability of layering transparent backgrounds on things or drawing boxes around text. Way more ways of representing and highlighting and getting people's attention if there's something interesting in the code that you want to highlight. So an editor extension whose job is to point out errors has got a lot of sort of arrows in its quiver about how to point those errors out to the programmer.
When I heard that I could create an editor extension, one of the things I wondered about was, and I believe, by the way, this has already been done, but could I develop an add-in or extension, I'm not sure what you even call it, for the editor where, you know, all those XML comments at the top of every method that I have in my code, could I replace that with a little collapsible form to give some almost strong typing to my element, to my comment structure, rather? So where would you start?
Well, where you would start with is the Managed Extensibility Framework, which is a big, generic, huge concept that applies to things other than Visual Studio. But it lets you announce that you're writing some code that cares about particular extension points. And then Visual Studio is announcing, hey, I have these extension points. And so through the framework, you can make a connection between your code and the parts of Visual Studio that are willing to be talked to that way. So you can say, you know the margins where you put the breakpoint symbols, the little red dots appear?
Sure.
There's margins you can draw in. So you can say, hey, Visual Studio, whenever you need to talk and draw your margins, just check with me. I'm one of the people to talk to about the margins. And Visual Studio basically says, okay, I'll keep that in mind. And then when it calls your code to say, you know, I'm ready to draw a margin, what can you tell me? Your code is able to look at the line and say, oh, I got nothing to say about this line, or, oh, for this line, here's a yellow square that I need you to draw in the margin because I'm trying to draw the programmer's attention to something that's going on this line.
Does Visual Studio have to monitor my plugin to know when to call it, or where does that initiation take place?
You register that you're interested or that you are a provider of certain kinds of capabilities. For example, you're what's called a tagging provider, and then you can also consume tags. So one part of your code is going through, oh, maybe finding spelling mistakes in comments. I like that extension. And another part of your code is going through noticing that a piece of text has been tagged and then helping Visual Studio to draw it however highlighted you want, whether that's wigglies under it or a box around it or a blue background under it or whatever.
So inside my little MEF extension that I've created, what's the big do it method that gets called from, you know, what's my entry point as Visual Studio starts to execute me?
I think it's the providers. You know, there are a whole whack of provider, something providers, whether it's tagging provider or a glyph provider. Glyph is the name for the funny symbols in the margins. And these are the things that you expect to get sort of, I guess, iterated through is the right word. It's a little bit like event handlers more than it is like really iterating through things. But you're registered as someone who Visual Studio should check with.
So editor extensions, think I get that. What else can we do with it?
Everything that you see is an extendable point. So if you would like to write your own programming language and hook that in, if you would like to write your own diagramming tool and hook that in, and hook them into what's already there. So maybe your diagramming tool is going to create C#, or maybe you're going to change an existing diagramming tool so that it generates your language rather than C#. All of those are sort of bubbling under the surface, waiting for you to grab onto them. And probably the wildest thing is the Visual Studio shell, which is what you see actually if you've ever gone onto a machine that doesn't have Visual Studio installed but it's got a lot of SQL tools and you've brought up the Business Intelligence Studio. It looks exactly like Visual Studio. In fact, the splash screen says Visual Studio. But of course, you can't compile a C# project with it. All you can do with it is open, let's say, SQL reporting services and edit a report or maybe mess around with stored procedures or something. So it's got the file open and print and that kind of plumbing in place, and you just plug in your goodness. And that's now available to everybody. So if you've got some application that would benefit from that Visual Studio infrastructure, you can write an application that fits into this shell. And you can even set it up so that if the person doesn't have Visual Studio, you get the empty shell. It's called isolated mode. And if the person does have Visual Studio, you just join everybody else in there, what's called integrated mode. So think about something like Team Explorer, where there's just another tab mixed in with Solution Explorer and the rest of them. So it's one-stop shopping for the developer because they don't have to switch products.
You know, I was, when you were describing that, thinking exactly about Team Explorer. I happen to be, and you know, you and I talked about this. I'm calling you from a hotel room down in Houston, Texas this week. And I'm teaching a class on Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server this week. One of the things that we talked about the first day of class was that I can install Team Explorer. That's the client for Team Foundation Server. And I don't even need Visual Studio on that machine. In other words, this is a add-in, in theory, for Visual Studio. But if I install Team Explorer, I can put it on a machine that does not have Visual Studio. And when I say start menu Visual Studio, what I will get is that Visual Studio shell you were just describing. And the only thing that'll be in there is Team Explorer. I can't actually create a new C# project, for example.
Right, but you've still got that look and feel that maybe is a little bit comfortable to you if you've met Visual Studio before.
So when the developers who wrote Team Explorer, and we'll just use that as an example, when they wrote that, sure. What type of project is that they created? Is that an add-in?
It's called a package, and it's a shell package. And basically, you need to hook yourself up to the shell, and then when you deploy or when you install, if there's a Visual Studio, it hooks into the Visual Studio that's there. If there's not a Visual Studio, it makes this sort of empty one to hook into. And the big advantage for them was they didn't have to write, you know, file open, edit copy, edit paste, all those millions of things, because they're already done by Visual Studio. They just had to focus on the part that made their content special and unique, the Team Explorer stuff.
I see. It sounds like also write a package, I hope I'm using the right word there, that would install as a separate instance of Visual Studio every time, because I don't want to sit alongside everybody else and play?
Yes, and that's especially true if your application isn't really aimed at developers. So it sort of depends, right? Like Team Explorer, sure, there's project managers and there's testers, but there's an awful lot of developers that are using those client tools into TFS. So, you know, why make them be in two products? But another kind of application that you might invent, you would want them to alt tab back and forth between Visual Studio and this. And in fact, you can even do some branding so that it doesn't look so much like Visual Studio. It looks like your logo here, your color scheme here. And then you would not want to integrate. You'd want to stay isolated.
So it's starting to sound like Visual Studio really is just this very sort of open and loosey-goosey composite Windows application, and I can just plug into it all over the place.
It's open. I'm not sure it's necessarily transparently open. I mean, there's just such a huge forest of possibilities for where you can hook into that finding them all can be a challenge. Enumerating them all can be a challenge. I've been to presentations where they put up a slide and, you know, you just cannot read the font and they say, well, we're sorry, but we didn't want to leave any of it off. You know, there's just so much. It's a very powerful application that you can leverage so that you don't have to do so much work. So there's maybe half the world is writing an extension because they just want to make their personal experience a little bit more productive. And the other half is saying, wow, this is a great carrier for my logic and it's going to save me from writing, you know, several hundred thousand lines of code. I'm in. Let's do this. Let's build it around this.
One of the things that you've mentioned a couple of times is that I could just quickly go out and get an extension. And you know, what does that mean? Did I go out onto the internet and find something, download it, and run an installer?
Well, it can. There's two big things that are new in 2010. One is this format called the V6 format. So depending on the extension I'm making, you know, I could send you an EXE or an MSI or something like that and tell you to install it the same way you'd install, you know, any kind of application. But the new format called the V6 format is one that Visual Studio can read and show you quite a lot of information about extension and then just install it for you. You don't have to sort of put things in the right place to get put in the right place for you, which is great. Then that's one game. Half of the game is the V6 format, which really makes distribution so much easier. The second is this gallery site they've set up, visualstudiogallery.com, where anybody and everybody can upload their extensions, mostly in V6 format, although there are some other formats supported. And it actually, they're providing the host space. So if you have your own website because you're an extension seller, then you can just link over to your site. But if you don't, you can just put it on the gallery and you're done. And it even hosts like a discussion forums and support forums for your extension right there and lets people rate it and so on. And that same gallery is available from inside Visual Studio. So you go in the Tools menu, Extension Manager, and click Online Gallery, and you're searching the exact same content that you would see on that website. And in a lot of cases, you can one-click install. So you go Tools, Extension Manager, you search, maybe you were interested when you heard me say italic comments, so you search for italic, and you see that extension in the results window, you click the download button, and presto, it's installed into your Visual Studio. You're done.
You know what else I've noticed out there on that gallery is that in addition to the V6, that's VSIX as is the extension of those files, right?
That's right. It's not the number.
Yeah, I just thought I'd mention that. In addition to those types of installers, I have seen MSIs out there. Just today, or it may have been yesterday, Microsoft released a new process template for Team Foundation Server called Visual Studio Scrum 1.0. It's a very specialized Scrum template. And I can actually find that in the Visual Studio Gallery too. If I go out to the online gallery and search for Scrum, it'll pop right up. And that's not even for Visual Studio though, right? That is actually something I install on the server.
Right. But it's just, it's sort of Visual Studio related. If you're a Visual Studio user, you might be interested. And so it's a good place to put it. There's some TFS power tools also available on the gallery. You know, the same sort of kind of thinking. Yes, it's for managing your server with, but we bet if you're a Visual Studio user, you're going to want it. And the availability of extensions is all over the place. I mean, I just saw a great extension come out from the Software Development Lifecycle guys. There's a bunch of C++ APIs that they don't want people to use anymore because they're not secure. Actually, technically, they're C, not C++, but they're used by C++ people. Stir copy and things. And they wrote an extension that highlights them if they're in your code. Draws wigglies under them. And it's a cool extension. It's not in the gallery, though. You have to go to the SDL blog and get it from there.
So that's pretty cool. I noticed, by the way, one of the first extensions that came out, and this came out of Microsoft right after that 2010 ship, was, you know how everybody gripes about the behavior and the functionality of the add references dialog? There's that power tool for Visual Studio Professional, comes right in through the gallery, and it totally replaces my old add reference dialog, and it gives me a whole new add reference experience, which just seems pretty cool. Have you played with that yet?
I really have, and it's a lot of fun to see this workflow happening where teams are realizing they don't have to wait for the train that is the next release of Visual Studio. You know, if there's something they really wish was on the file menu, or if there's some dialog that they really wish was a lot more usable, and boy, oh boy, the add reference dialog qualifies on that count. They can write that extension. They can write that dialogue, put it on the gallery, and then encourage people to replace the behavior that nobody likes with the new behavior that everybody likes. It's very cool.
That is cool, because maybe now we won't have to wait so long in between product updates to get really drastically different behavior, huh?
Well, that's exactly right. You know, you can imagine that Visual Studio is this huge thing. I can't even imagine how many different people have to sign off on getting features added. And there must be some day where they're like, that's it. Nothing else goes on the edit menu. We don't care who signs. You know, Steve Ballmer can sign. It's not happening. The edit menu's closed. And, you know, you're a guy with a great idea. And so you write an extension. And as long as you can get people to find your extension and install it, the new item will be on the edit menu. That's very cool.
Okay, so we've talked about extensions and we've talked about macros and these other extensibility points, the shell, but we still have this thing called add-in, right? We used to have the ability to write a Visual Studio add-in. Is that still there?
It is still there, and it is a little bit different. So you have a package and an extension. That's kind of, if you will, new school. And then you have add-in, which is older school. And the deal with add-ins is it's COM interop. So you're coming at Visual Studio through its COM interfaces. And there's no particular reason why you should say, ooh, I don't want to do that, because you can still do it for managed code, right? But you can't distribute an add-in as a V6. And the V6 format is so convenient that I think if I'm starting absolutely from scratch, I'd need to have a good reason to build it as an add-in rather than to build it as a package. That's all.
Oh, okay. So really, the capabilities in the V6 distribution model are there, right? There's no real reason that I should have to back up and use an add-in anymore?
That's right. Just because what the V6 delivers in terms of describing your extension, you know, it being carried around with all this metadata that an MSI, well, it's an MSI. If you want to, go ahead and double-click it and start installing, you know, and you'll get what you get. And, of course, an EXE is even scarier, so that if a random stranger emails you an EXE, the last thing you would ever do in the universe is run it, right? But with a V6, you know, it's just a renamed zip file. You can, if you want to, rename it to whatever.zip and unzip it and take a look inside. There's a manifest and there's this metadata, like here's the author and here's the title and here's the description. And you can really look at the payload if you want to. And of course, Visual Studio can also look at the payload. It shows you the icons before you install it, that kind of thing. So there's more transparency in that format. It's better for everybody. The reason it's better for the developer is they don't have to say, now I need to put this file in this folder and this zip in this folder. They just have the payload in the V6 with some metadata that explains what kind of thing it is, and Visual Studio does the rest.
These V6 files are sort of like, I don't know, Word documents these days. You know, with Word documents, we can also name them zip and take a look inside. So same idea?
Same idea, a packaging standard that you can work through. Now, they can't do everything that an MSI or an EXE can do, especially if you have older code that you already wrote. Maybe you rely on a registry key for setting what language you're spell checking against. Well, you can't, there's no way in a V6 to say, oh yeah, put this stuff in the registry. So you'd have to write an MSI or an EXE to do that, to put that stuff in place for your code to look at later.
When I say that I found something in the gallery and I'm going to install it, do I use the word package to describe what that is?
The most generic word is extension.
Okay.
Some people will say that it's only an extension if you wrote actual code, you know, something that could be compiled. And so they say that code snippets aren't an extension or a project template isn't an extension. I'm prepared to grant it extension if you saved something in a file. I'll call it an extension. That's the name I'll give the file.
Okay, well, we're going to publish that is now the definition because Kate has said so. That's awesome. You just set the standard for that. All right.
There you go.
Okay, so let's say, for example, I want to hook into that tools options dialog. I noticed, by the way, for people who use ReSharper, you may have noticed this. When they went from 4 point whatever they were at to 5, so with 2010, we went to ReSharper 5, we used to configure ReSharper through the add-in menu, and now we do it on tools options. So what is that about, and did they use this plugin model that you're talking about to get there?
I'm pretty sure they did. I mean, I obviously can't know for sure.
Well, that's
fair.
But
you have a lot more ability to connect and to communicate using, not other than just sticking yourself on the right-click menu or sticking yourself on the tools menu, but to actually plug under that options dialog. Because if you think about it from the point of view of the end user, they aren't really clear what came with the product and what was an extension, especially if IT gave them their computer. And so they want an option, they figure they should go under tools options, right? And when it's not there and you're like, oh, yeah, you have to know to go right-click over here on this toolbar, they're not very happy. So I like to see the line blurring a little, although it does maybe make life tougher for support staff sometimes.
Okay, well, do me a favor. Let's walk through what the bare minimum sort of Hello World extension looks like. I'm going to walk up to Visual Studio, and there it is. What do I do?
Well, what do you want to do?
Oh, okay, that's fair. That's fair because there's so much I could do, right? But what would be something super simple like how about adding a menu?
The simplest thing I start people with is the content extensions. So, for example, snippets. You can right-click anywhere in any source file and type right-click, insert snippet, and choose from this menu of pre-written things. They vary by language, but let's say you forget how to do a switch statement, you know? You can write your own snippet for maybe something you do all the time, and it's just a file of XML, and then you put that file in the right place, and next time you right-click, that snippet will be there for you.
You know, for such a long time, we could create snippets, but we didn't have a snippet editor, right?
That's right.
Is there something in there now that allows us to edit the snippets as well?
There is, but it's an extension.
So I download it.
You go to the gallery, there's a snippet designer, and then you don't have to type any XML. Yeah, it'll take care of it for you. And it's really sharp, too. It's very nice. I like it a lot. But no, it's not built into the product. It's an extension you got to go get.
I am so going to go get that. For any of us that actually have to do this on a projector once in a while, that's, snippets are gold.
Oh, absolutely. The worst thing in the world, you've got, 600 people, and they're watching your inability to spell integer.
I call that situation the human compiler. It works really well.
Yes, exactly. Watching people yell out, semicolon, semicolon, and you're like, what? You said three lines ago, you forgot your semicolon. Snippets are wonderful for presenters, but they're also pretty darn good just for people who figure out once how to do something like, say, send an email. And then they're like, I know I'm going to need this again in 2 years. And I've seen people with text files in which they just paste random little humps of code that they think they might need. And saving them out as a snippet is a lot more convenient.
One of the things that I do over and over and over again when I'm writing code is I'll use, particularly let's say I'm using a behavior-driven development framework like MSpec. I've got this fairly complicated code that I have to write over and over and over with these lambdas and, it should do this and when this occurs, using that sort of if, or rather given, then, when syntax, all that good stuff. And that ends up being a lot of methods. And so snippets help me by actually just having little 1 and 3 liner snippets that I throw into my code all the time. So yeah, plus one for that for me. I just found the snippet designer in the gallery, by the way. I opened up Visual Studio while we're sitting here talking. And download and install. Thank you. That was awesome, Kate. Thanks.
Well, did I not tell you that some of the things, the cost is going to be measured in seconds?
There you go. It's in.
It's as simple as that extension manager connection into the gallery really rocks. You don't even have to wait while a browser launches.
Okay, so I still want to get to this 101 experience where maybe I put in my own menu item. So what I want to do is I want to create a menu at the top that says Dave, and when I select it, it pops up a little form that says Hello World.
I'm not sure I can walk you through that one out loud, but it's still pretty simple. Basically, you're going to create a project. You're going to use a template from the gallery. You're going to get the SDK, and the SDK is going to give you a whole whack of new project templates, most of which build to V6s.
This is the Visual Studio SDK?
Yes.
Okay.
The Visual Studio SDK, which I got to give them props for this. This thing used to be like 100 meg, and they've gotten it down to 11.
Oh, wow. That's significant.
Yeah. Well, because teams like to deliver samples with their SDKs, which I'm generally in favor of, samples and little reference apps and documentation of all kinds, most of which is almost usable. And they just said, let's rip all that out. We'll put some items in your start menu that you can go get that stuff if you want it. We'll put all that stuff on the gallery. People can go get it. But we'll just bring the SDK itself down to the smallest possible payload that you could bring down and get rolling. And they got it down to 11 meg.
Okay, so I go get this SDK.
And so then it's going to add a whole pile of projects to your new project dialog. There's an extensibility. So you might choose, say, package. And then you could go in from there and start to add in the behaviors that you wanted to create. Changing the menus and popping up a Hello World kind of dialog isn't actually the simplest thing to do.
Oh.
The simplest thing to do is to let Visual Studio handle the UI and for you to just set properties. So, for example, telling it that you'd like to be responsible for formatting some text, and when it hands you the text, look at it and decide, yeah, I'd like that to be underlined. But the actual job drawing the pixels is Visual Studio's job, not yours.
I see. I'm still thinking about this as events. So you're telling me that I want to register interest in this capability in my head that's translating as an event. And maybe I've got that wrong, but how do I know what event I want to sign up for?
This is back to this slide that was so big that no one could read the font. There is so much, especially if we just focus on the editor, everything about formatting text, about what happens when you save a file, what happens when you press F5, what happens when you open a file for the first time, all of these things, you can say, I'm someone you need to check with when you're doing this. So whether it's rendering a line on the screen or creating a new file, whatever the circumstance, you say, talk to me when you do that. And then you can hook in and your code can interact with the object model of Visual Studio to do, well, whatever great idea it is that you've had that would make a wonderful extension. I find that's actually the hard part.
Well, if I'm trying to figure out which one of those things I want to tap into, I guess MSDN is my friend there, right?
MSDN is your friend. There's also a series of samples on code. Now, this is a little bit confusing, on Code Gallery. Code Gallery is like a cross between the Visual Studio Gallery and CodePlex. Everything on Code Gallery is done by Microsoft full-time employees. You have to have a blue badge to put something on Code Gallery, whereas CodePlex and the Visual Studio Gallery are both, you know, no holds barred, anybody and everybody. And so a lot of the extensions that Microsoft teams have written, you can't get the source code on Visual Studio Gallery, but you can get the source code on the Code Gallery. And typically there's links from their Visual Studio Gallery pages to the Code Gallery pages. And so you could say, wow, I really love this italic comments, to pick one that I actually don't know for sure that the source code is there, but I believe it is. I want to see how he did it. And you open it up and you read his code and you say, oh, I get it. He's registered for this. He said that he is a provider. If I do that, then I can make, I don't know, bold comments or pale gray comments or whatever. And copying other people's code is a great way to figure out some of those basics of how things are done. So there's examples of rendering code differently, various ways of highlighting inside the body of the editor and in the margins. And in fact, when you go file a project, some of the starting points, there's a project that I think draws all A's with a purple box around them. Anywhere in your code, if there's the letter A, draws a purple box around it. But that's not being presented as a useful template in and of itself, but as a place for you to start so that you can see what you need to do to make that happen.
Okay, well, that's handy. So I have a question. You know, this Visual Studio Gallery is not new for 2010, right? That's been around a little while, hasn't it?
It really has, and you can find extensions for older versions of Visual Studio on there. You can filter by which version you want to search for. But it really was invisible, much like Code Gallery. You would happen to be one of the few people who know it's there, great, but most people had no clue. And so hooking it in with the extension manager has really changed that discoverability factor so dramatically.
So you think the fact that it's accessible directly from the UI is what has led to so many more tools being published out there?
It's really interesting. People who want to give a tool away, you know, they want it to be discovered. They put it on their own blog, maybe six people download it. Then when they discover there's a way that 1,000 people download it, they want to do that because they've already decided they want to give it away. As soon as people start to do that, word gets around and more people start going because there's good stuff there.
Well, what do I not know enough to ask you? Because I'll bet you there's some little gem in there that's just so fun for you.
I think what I'm really enjoying the most is watching the people who've never really joined sort of a open source community effort give things away for the first time because it's the granularity is so small. You can say, look, I wrote this cool thing for testing regular expressions. Man, it's hard to write regular expressions. So I wrote this little extension that helps me to do that. And now all kinds of people are downloading it, and I'm part of a community, and I feel hooked in and connected. It's very difficult to do that on, say, CodePlex. You can't realistically expect that you can write a couple hundred lines of code, put it on CodePlex, and make friends and influence people. But extensions are like that. They're tiny, and if they're useful, people love them, and you start to get a name for yourself. And so I think you'll start to see people who coming, if you will, out of nowhere into, wow, this guy really knows his stuff because he wrote an extension and he put it on the gallery. And that kind of leveraging effect of community, sort of an emerging or emergent property that maybe was not expected when it was created, but I start to see that happening where it's building on each other and people are lining up to give their work away to each other.
Okay, well, actually, you've got me all jazzed up now. I want to go put something on the gallery and see if anybody pulls it.
You should. I mean, we're not all going to get 50,000 downloads, but the download count is right there. You can go check your score every day as though you were playing Stack Overflow.
So do you have anything in the gallery yet?
No. Well, I've gone through the upload process a number of times. I have to take screenshots of it or to show people how to do it and so on. And I usually delete right before I publish because my demos are pretty trivial. I want the concepts of where do you hook into MEF or where do you hook into COM or where do you hook into these other extensibility methods to kind of outshine the complexity. Plus, a bunch of people went and took all the really good ones. Spell checking, for example, that was a great idea, but it's been taken, as has regular expression testing. So mine are a little more workaday, and people are not going to be lined up to get the extension that puts an orange dot in the margin of your to-do comment. But perhaps when I got a little more time, I'll come up with the great extension idea, and then it'll be up there.
Okay, I'll give you one, and you can do this one so I won't have to, okay? So I want to be able to highlight some code in Visual Studio, right-click and pull it into my paste buffer as formatted HTML so I can blog it more easily.
Oh, you know what? I believe that's
no!
been done.
Okay, well, good. I'll go find that one too. Kate, thank you so much. This has been really cool. I'm totally jacked now to go out and write an extension. And you have a whole class out there, by the way, now on Pluralsight On Demand that will just take people from start to finish on all this stuff, right?
Absolutely. Starts with macros, starts with snippets, and works its way right up as far as I dare to go. Yes. There was no need to have my hair down to my knees. For now I realize that there is no need for peace and love, brotherhood and harmony. And now I realize that only time will tell if this world works out. Don't be a hippie. Don't be a hippie.
Wasn't that great? I know for a fact that at least a high percentage of people listening to this show are not going to be able to stand it. They're going to have to go out and create their own Visual Studio extensions like I know I will. Because, frankly, that's just developer crack right there. So, great discussion, Kate. Thanks very much. And, of course, as always, we'd like to thank the Judies for letting us use their music. You can find out more about the Judies at wastedtalentrecords.com. And finally, I would love to hear any suggestions or requests for guests that you might have for the Pluralcast. Head on over to cast.pluralsight.com and let us know. Well, that's all for this episode, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in class sometime soon. Don't be a hippie.